Chapter 16. Loreen and Craig were sitting at the kitchen table, drinking diet soda, when Ron got to the house. Loreen met his eyes, turned away, got up and said she was going to take a shower so that she and Craig could get going. Ron was putting together the fixings for a pot of coffee when he heard the shower start to run. "How long have you known Loreen, Craig?"
"About 3 months."
"Why, how long do you know her?"
"We go back 6 or 7 years."
"What was she like then?" said Craig.
"More obvious."
"What's that mean?"
"Well," said Ron, putting the flame under the pot, "maybe she wasn't any more obvious then. Maybe I've just been around her long enough to learn more of her maneuvers. You know?"
"No. What do you mean?"
"I guess I must have seen her go through at least 25 guys. And I'll be damned if she didn't leave every one of them bleeding. But I'm sure somebody like you wouldn't let that happen. You know what I mean? The way she just draws you in, close, then scratches the shit out of you like an alley cat."
"That's a nice thing for a friend to say."
"Oh, it's nothing for you to feel threatened about. But I've seen her rip some pretty good guys up good."
"And I'll bet you were one of them," said Craig, with a condescending tone in his voice.
"No, not me.
How do you think we were able to stay friends this long? Once you start fucking her, she seems to develop this need to take you apart. But she doesn't ever seem to get them back together properly. You know, like a kid with a clock. Syndrome or something."
"I don't believe any of that shit. Sounds to me like you must be stoned or something.
That's probably it, you know. I haven't had anything to smoke in a couple days. Do you think the effects are that long-lasting?"
"I never got the feeling that I was being taken apart."
"That's good," said Ron. "She'll probably change her whole approach to men because of you. That's probably what will happen."
"You're trying to fuck up my head, aren't you?"
"Not really. I'm just making conversation while I wait for the coffee to perk. But ask her sometime. Has she got the nickname Snake?"
When Loreen came out of the shower, she saw Craig sitting on the back porch looking depressed. Ron was in the kitchen drinking a cup of coffee.
"Do you know what time Chris is going to be back?" she asked Ron.
"Nope.
I think he's having band practice tonight, isn't he?"
"I guess so."
"Do you see Robin today?"
"We went to the beach."
"How was that?"
"Great."
"I know you're pissed off, but there's more going on here than you've been around for, Ron. Chris isn't the together person that he makes himself out to be."
"Tell him," said Ron.
"You're just being stubborn," said Loreen. She went into her room and got dressed. Then she came back into the kitchen. "Craig and I are going to the city."
"Have a real good time," said Ron.
After they left, he got out his notes and started working on the song he was writing about Rahway. She was tall, she had black hair, a crooked nose and crocodile teeth. I said to myself, well, at least she looks too mean to be diseased. He put down his pen, went for his guitar. He sang the new line of Snake Garden Paradise over and over, trying to hear what would come next. Then it came.
I said, "You're a bitch."
She answered, "I'm a goddess." "Like a fool." I said, "Let's find out." Now he was ready for a new variation of the chorus. He wailed, "Snake Garden Paradise. She makes it feel so nice. Playing Adam and Eve. I had my own room. I never wanted to leave. If you come here more than once, you'll come all your life to the Snake Garden Paradise." That was it.
the last stanza that he needed to put it together. He was singing it through for about the fourth time when Chris came in. "Hey, man," said Ron. "All right," said Chris. "Are you working on a new song?" "I think I just finished it, but I need some help with the music. My music all sounds the same, you know what I mean?" "It's all in the same key," said Chris. "Yeah, flat," said Ron. They paused and then both laughed. "Let's smoke a joint in your room and I'll play it for you." They went to Chris's bedroom and Chris tuned his guitar while Ron worked on rolling a couple of joints. "It's about somebody going to a whorehouse for the first time," said Ron. "Far out. His father sends him there. There is here. And the starring whore is none other than our friend, the snake." Chris began to giggle. "Oh, no." They smoked about half of the joint, and Ron said, "Why don't you finish that and just listen the first time?" Chris began giggling almost immediately. By the time Ron got to the new lines, Chris was laughing so hard that it had infected Ron, who had to stop playing. He lit the second joint. "I think we should play it for the bitch, along with a reprise of High Professor Blues." "How do you think of these things?" Ron drew in on the joint and held the smoke in his lungs. "I owe it all to drugs," he said, as he exhaled. Chris giggled some more. "I think I made sort of a preemptive nuclear strike on her this afternoon." "What do you mean?" Ron told Chris about what he'd said to Craig. Chris began giggling uncontrollably again. Then he said, "Why did you do that?" "Fuck her and the fizzmails that like her," said Ron. Chris slapped him on the back. "Well, boy, it seems to me that you're well on the road to returning to your old vituperative self." Ron laughed. "Where'd you disappear to today?" "I had some business," said Chris. "And then I stopped by to see Wally Ventros."
"The landlord?"
"Yeah. I put next month's rent in my name. The sheriff is going to have to deal with how that affects his new laws."
"Oh, man. Warren's not going to like that."
"Fuck him, too," said Chris. "Are you going to stick around for band practice tonight?"
"I don't know," said Ron. "Depends on if I hear from Robin."
At about 7 o'clock, he called her mother's house, but Mrs. Hinkle said that Robin wasn't there. She said something about her going to visit a friend. Ron started to wonder, which friend? Suppose she just avoided him and went back to Minneapolis. It might really be the last time he saw her, ever. The thought disturbed him, made him pace back and forth in the kitchen. He was still pacing when he saw Robin standing in the doorway by his room.
"Hi."
"I'm sorry," he said. "I shouldn't have said anything to anyone about us. I should have known that nobody would understand what's going on." She was about to answer when Chris came around the corner and into the kitchen. He was smoking a joint.
"Roar H," he said. "How are you doing?"
Ron noticed her flinch at the sight of Chris and fix her eyes on the joint when she answered,
"Fine, Chris. How are you?"
"Hi," said Chris. Ron gave him a nervous laugh. Ron said, "We're going out for a while. We'll see you later." When they got into the car, Robin said, "Have you been smoking again?"
"Just a little," arrived Ron. "Not like I was before."
"I thought you said you'd quit."
"Chris is real persistent, you know? But I've got it under control this time."
"Ron, you're addicted to that stuff. There isn't any way for you to have it under control."
"I'll be fine," said Ron.
"Did you start to say something back at the house?"
"Nothing important," said Robin.
She wondered why he couldn't see what the sight of him around drugs did to her, but decided that she'd lost that argument and given up that battle a long time ago, and it would be best for her to just let it go. "What do you feel like doing?" said Ron. "I don't know. Listen, what I came to see you about was that my plans have changed. I'm going back to Minnesota tomorrow night." Ron looked stunned. "Why?" "A lot of reasons. Mostly, what it comes down to is that I really don't want to be here anymore. I don't belong here." "Are you going back to Alex?" "I'm going back to me. It's my home, my job, my life, my cat, and I miss them." "Okay. Staying with my mother isn't comfortable. And from what you told me about what's happening in Rahway and what the people there think of me, I certainly don't want to stay there." "Are we going to stay in touch with each other?" "I'd planned on it. What I need to know is how I fit into your life now." "You're really special to me." "What does that mean?" "Ron, do you really want to do this?" "I don't know what I really want to do about anything. I don't know where I really want to live, what I really want to do, or anything. The only thing that I do know is that I really want you, and I can't have you." "You're going to kill everything we had because you just won't leave anything alone." "I can't help it. I know. You used to respect my persistence. I respect you. I'm just not in love with you anymore." Ron felt the tears filling up his eyes at the sound of the words. He wanted to cry out, "Why not?" and tell her that she couldn't leave him, that none of that would have done any good. "You're going to wind up hating me, you know?" "I don't think so. It's going to become too much trouble to deal with, and I'm probably going to keep on saying the wrong things at the wrong time, just like I'm doing now." "I wish you'd stop the self-pity. It's not something that I like seeing you do to yourself, and it isn't healthy." Ron spoke fiercely. "It's not self-pity. It's you and me, and it's dying. And I think it sucks that it's dying. You're not even gonna ever find someone who loves you as I do." "Then I'll learn to be alone. Now who's doing this self-pitying?" She gave him a sharp look. "It feels shitty when somebody says that to you, doesn't it?" said Ron. The car was quiet. Rodden didn't know where to drive, but he didn't know where to stop either. It was dark now, and a large harvest moon had risen in the sky. He wanted to drive toward it. He wanted to show her something that she'd never seen before, something that would overwhelm her so much that she couldn't stand the thought of not being with him. "The sky is beautiful, isn't it?" "Yes," she said. She took hold of his hand and kissed his fingers. Ron's mind slid through scene after scene of their time together as they rode in the car. Their favorite plays, their favorite books, their favorite places. Each of the scenes flashed in back of his eyes. And then he glanced over at her, and she seemed to be seeing them too. After he dropped her off, the voice playing in his head was, "Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?" They had loved that too, but it had scared them. When George and Martha had their kid, they gave it shape and form between them, and kept the thing from the outside. Sad, sad George and Martha. So much stronger than you and I. each with a child lost inside us.